Does anybody still call you Sid the Squid?
I'm afraid far too many people call me Sid the Squid. I made the mistake of telling one of the Bangles that was my nickname in elementary school, and I'm Squid to some of my kids sometimes. It's just embarrassing.
Right.
Nah, okay.
Was it just a rhyming thing?
No, it was a pathetic animated cartoon character down south in a very low-budget animated cartoon series. Only Dixie would be dumb enough to put on the air. And, I mean, a low-brow version of sort of Top Cat. And I don't know why I brought that nickname out to California and confessed to it.
Oh, why is Top Cat not on? That was great.
Top Cat was very good. Yeah. I'm not bad-mouthing Top Cat.
Top Cat was especially funny if you watched it in Britain, Sid. Because after the Top Cat, Top Cat hammered in through the theme tune, then the credits came up, Boss Cat. Because we had to call it that here, because Top Cat was a brand of cat food.
Oh, I see. Commercial.
So it used to freak me out as a kid, so it would be Top Cat, Top Cat. And now here's Boss Cat.
Well, of course, it's based on Sergeant Bilko.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Doberman. Yeah.
Come on, should we do it? What's that line? The line that no one knows.
What?
Whose close friends get to call him TC. What's the next line? No one knows this line.
Right. Okay.
It's providing it's with dignity. Mm-hmm. Right. There you go, Sid. Yeah.
Did you have a nickname at school?
No, just Stew.
Oh, okay.
He lucked out.
Yeah.
None of this Stew the Squid stuff.
I was Radish.
I missed the chance though, didn't I? No, I did actually remember. I was called Thor.
Oh, only by yourself, though. Right, okay. Anyway, now then, Chainwise, Lynn Mason, pick up the phone, please. We're trying to get in touch with you. And welcome and Happy New Year to our resident musicologist, Sid Griffin. How are you?
I'm well, and Happy New Year to you both and your listeners. Yes.
And have you been out and about with the Cole Porters, or are you setting off somewhere?
I'm leaving tomorrow for Los Angeles for a Longriders first gig in L.A. in over a quarter of a century.
Wow, okay. Wow.
So that's fantastic.
Is it the original four?
It is the Fab Four.
Right,
and,
okay.
And we're really looking forward to it. It's a charity gig.
Yeah.
And so we're very looking forward to it. And the Cole Porters pick up the pieces. And we're doing one thing in January, but then we're picking it up in February.
Okay. Well, I mean, obviously, we'll talk about the fact that we should say the Union Chapel and Bournemouth Folk Club in February is Cole Porters. But yeah, if you're in West Hollywood tomorrow night, why not drop by the Troubadour?
It's a Tuesday night. We got to rehearse.
Oh, sorry, Tuesday night, of course. So West Hollywood, Tuesday, January the 14th. First gig in 27 years by the Longriders at the Troubadour.
Yeah, and it's where Elton John cracked it, so why not us? 27 years late.
That's right. The Troubadour. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That's right. It's where Elton broke America.
Yeah,
that's,
yes, yeah. Sid Griffin is with us, and good to catch you up. But also, you're in London and we're in Manchester, but you've still tweeted a little photo of you with the contents of this new Small Faces box set. There's loads in there.
The photograph looks great, I'm just surrounded by this stuff. You've got a 72-page book. 72-page book. It's a huge box set, as if LP size. Two posters, one of which is apparently the one from the live tracks that's on their final release, The Autumn Stone, a posthumous release. This is a Small Faces live thing. There's another poster. It has John Peel's name on it. He was the compere that night at Newcastle City Hall, by the by.
Right.
There's another poster announcing the Tin Soldier single. There's four, count them, whoops, this is a little close to the mic there, Sid. Four 45 RPM singles with picture sleeves, back from the day, you know, the actual kind of... reproduction.
Facsimiles,
some postcards, a book, make fanning noise, Griffin, a book that's not the book of the band's history, which I said is 72 pages. This is strictly the lyrics.
Wow.
And the lyrics have been proofread by Kenny Jones, the drummer, now attorney and polo pony breeder.
Yeah.
And my close personal friend, Ian McLagan, who I pray is listening to this in Texas. Two posters make fanning noise. This really is what they are. I'm not just waving postcards or, you know, shirt cardboard of the band. One in color from the one of their album sleeves. I mean, it's really... a facsimile of the original press kit you got when you bought Ogden's Nut Gone Flake, and that ain't the half of it, because there's four CDs and blah, 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 blah.
Let me just say that those lyrics transcribed for the first time ever, it says here. If you want to see this, go to Sid's own Twitter page. Sid's there, or BBC Radmack. If you visit the show, we've retweeted this, and you can see the whole cornucopia of delights that are this Small Faces box set. Yeah.
And it really is something. I thought that the winner, and I'm talking about packaging, gentlemen, to your audience. I thought the winner, much less the fact that I love their music, I thought the winner of the best packaged, best produced, most Sherlock Holmes-styled archival, no stone unturned package would have been the 13th floor elevators box set, which came out, I believe it was on Charlie about 2 or 3 years ago. Mm. And I'm going to have to say this might trump it. This right. is really something. The tracks sound fantastic. You're getting a lot of unreleased material. All the fan-ish stuff that you could want is here in the package. It's informative. So if you want to know that McLagan played Hammond organ, mellotron, marimba, and sang backup on the single mono version of their track, The Journey, you can find that out. It's really, really impressive. Robin and some of the guys, Tony Harris, Johnny, all the mob, at Charlie and Snapper, John Luke, they should all take a bow. It's really something.
Well, it's called Here Come the Nice, the Small Faces, the Immediate Years box set, and we'll talk lots more about it, but let's hear them.
It was Ian McLagan playing Steinway Grand Piano Wurlitzer, Hammond organ and vocals.
I'm checking you. You're
yeah,
right.
Because as you were saying, as you were saying, this annotation and documentation.
P.P. Arnold.
P.P. Arnold on backing vocals, Tin Soldier Mono from the first CD of this compendious box set that Sid Griffin, our friend, is talking about here. 67 to 69 is the period it covers, it says here, the immediate years. So are we to take from that that the Small Faces flame burned kind of briefly but brightly, Sid?
Well, they had that mod period earlier on, and they made a very rough they made a smooth transition in a rough patch, because what happened was, as I've so lavishly and slavishly followed all these guys around, there was that move away from, if you have pop singles, you're kind of a square post Sgt. Pepper, and you're not hip with it, man. So the Small Faces came out of that fantastic round Ogden's nut round set, which of course didn't go well with retail because it was a circular package, much less record, and they couldn't keep it. It literally rolled off shelves, and it angered people at retail. I kid you not. But they broke ground. They didn't just have the early hit records like All or Nothing and Ichiku Park. They really got into a new thing. And when you listen to a track like Tin Soldier or some of the stuff we could play, I'm really struck at how they're sort of leaving behind some of that Who, Beatles, 65, 66 stuff, which they were so great at, and doing a whole new thing. It's like they're a psychedelic Booker T and the MGs.
And they were prolific, weren't they? When you look at all this stuff.
Amazing, isn't it?
All the Marriott and Lane stuff. And in fact, there were more band compositions than I'd remembered.
Well, I have four. And if anyone goes on Twitter and looks at that I've leaned him against the microphone because it's amazing. 1996, there was one. 1999, same tracks. 1999, there was one. I've got one from 2002, and there's one from about 2004. And the great thing about this Here Come the Nice box set on Immediate that I'm talking about now is they finally found the original master tapes. So these CDs that are in this box set sound terrific. And I hope the fidelity comes through to so many of your listeners. I mean, they sound fantastic at home. They sound fantastic on my headphones. I'm very impressed with the remastering. And I usually am iffy on it because a lot of people think top end good, bottom end good. What's in the middle? Not much. Right. This has really been done very, very well. And the remixing, a lot of time the remixing is turn up the bass, turn up the drums. This has been faithful to the sound of the 60s mixes. However, they've panned it, and it's, if you will, more stereo. And so it's really spatial and just, it's very impressive musically, not just on the behalf of the band, who were terrific, but on the way the CDs sound. They sound really, the band's never, literally, in the most literal sense of the term, they've never sounded better.
I think Ian McLagan, your friend Ian McLagan, said of these, the records that we played, that these were the best. This was the sound of the Small Faces captured at its best because of the limitations of the number of tracks. Some of these mono two-track recordings. So they put all the instruments live on one and then the singing on the other.
Yeah, the early pressings of a lot of the Parlophone things like Rubber Soul, with the vocals on one channel and the instrumentation on the other. That's just terrible. This is really the way it sounds. And I remember back in the 80s, the way it should sound, excuse me.
Yeah.
I remember back in the 80s when McLagan lived in Los Angeles, as did I, he would quite rightly complain about the sound of the reissues on vinyl of the Small Faces, how they're getting worse and worse. Mm. And that kind of continued on to the CDs. The earlier CDs just don't sound that great. This sounds fantastic. And of course, the only downside of that is how awful to have been Ian McLagan and Kenny Jones railing against the gods for this bad sonic quality for years. And now here they are. And as Pete Townsend writes in his liner notes, people really should put them in the top level, in the way up in the pantheon of 60s British groups, or just 60s groups, period. This is hot stuff.
Could I just ask you a more general question, Sid? I mean, is this the way that the music business will increasingly go, that you will get these small run, high quality, massive, you know, artifacts for real collectors, you know?
Yes, without question, Stuart. Yeah. That is a very good question, because how is the record industry going to move forward? I was just talking to Tony Harris about this, the main man at Snapper. And how are you going to sell 3 million copies of this or that? How are we going to find new Adeles? It's very, very difficult for people to do that now. Harder than it's been since, you know, pre-Beatles, pre-Elvis. But what you can do is you can do limited print runs of, say, 3,000, 5,000 of whomever, and a lavish package. And some of these things are going to go for 200 quid. Yeah, yeah. Yes, my friends, 200 quid, not dollars. And people are going to buy them that love that band, and you'll have that 3,000 fans or 5,000 fans, and they will sell out. Sandy Denny, as I was discussing earlier with some of the record collecting crowd, when they saw me waving this up and down Regent Street, look what I've got that you don't, Small Faces box set. That drew a crowd. We were talking about 19 CDs of Sandy Denny, CDs of Sandy Denny, and as Phil Smee, the great artwork guy, and I discussed, it sold out. Yeah. It has sold out. 19 CDs Sandy sold out, and they're going to do a repressing. This is the way it's going, Stuart.
I think
you bet.
It's like, you know, I was talking about town centres and how you revive those and these sort of things. I think if you make things more bespoke and desirable, don't you? The kind of the mass market, because there's so much online shopping and out-of-town shopping centres now, and records, you can download anything. But this bespoke thing has got to be the way forward, hasn't
it? You have to give the consumer a reason, and just putting out a one CD collection of Small Faces hits again isn't a reason.
No.
For instance, if they'll let me have one of these things, I'd frame one of these posters. Yeah. I mean, the posters, the artwork is reproduced so well. I wouldn't be surprised if it was some sort of Nash Editions, reference to Graham Nash there, and his wonderful inkjet.
Yeah.
The poster reproduction is fantastic. Mm. You could frame that and proudly have it on the wall if you're a Small Faces fan, which I am.
Yeah, and then and that is a kind of framed picture on your wall. The price becomes quite reasonable, doesn't it?
Because
what would you pay for a picture?
I was just going to say, before we moved on, talk about niche, currently on my desk at home, a 20-CD box set covering the period of 1 year of King Crimson's incarnation when they made the album Red. 20 CDs of that.
As they discuss what they're going to have for lunch.
And also you get newly written contributions from, Robert Plant and Paul Weller and Bowie and Peter Frampton and Nick Mason. What was the impact of the Small Faces in the States? Because, of course, we talk about the Beatles and the Stones. One of the most influential bands on the American bands, as we've talked about before, was the Yardbirds, who had a real sort of edge to them. And of course, Steve Marriott went on to become a huge star with Humble Pie in the States, didn't he?
But the difference was, and I've talked to McLagan about this, and I'm going to drop this name, here goes, Ronnie Lane. I talked to Ronnie about it, the late, great Ronnie Lane. And McLagan told me, he says, when they did that famous, well, to pop nuts like you and me and many of your listeners, when the Who and the Small Faces did this famous Down Under tour, on the way back, they landed in San Francisco, and the Small Faces couldn't get off I think they were stayed overnight because the plane was delayed, but they couldn't leave this hotel at San Francisco International Airport. That was their only visit to the United States of America.
Right.
Wow. That was it. So McLagan told me he went to this hotel in San Francisco at this San Francisco International Airport and spun the dial and was just blown away by the States. Ichiku Park was a hit. I bought Ichiku Park as a kid as a single in the United States and loved it. I'm Only Dreaming on the Flip, and loved it to pieces. But they didn't tour. They didn't come over. And the difference is, Humble Pie worked America, and got, in my opinion, some of the success that the Small Faces should have had.
Yeah.
I don't think we'd have had Rod and the Faces. I think if the Small Faces had come to America, I think they'd have lasted to 73, 74.
Yeah, and Humble Pie were huge, and that Frampton and Frampton Comes Alive and all that thing spins
came
up
out
from
of
that.
This.
Nod to heavy rocker is an unusual career, isn't it?
Very strange. Yeah.
And of course, You Need Loving is this whole lot of love for Led Zepp. I mean, everybody knows what I'm talking about. And then on Gasoline Alley, Rod, with some of the Faces, does a wonderful version of the Small Faces, My my way of giving on Gasoline Alley. And don't get me started. And he would be the first to admit it. Don't get me started on Paul Weller, what he's taken from the Small Faces. And when I use the word taken, I mean in a good way.
And he would cheerfully admit that,
yes,
of course.
Yes, he would cheerfully admit that, including imitating Marriott's haircut.
Well, of course, yeah.
We're talking about a band that influenced fashion. I mean, these guys had the package.
Well, they did.
In sport.
It's out on the 27th anyway, this box set. Here Come the Knives, the Small Faces. We'll have the title track of the box set. Great talking to you, Sid, as ever.
Always good talking to you guys.
Cheers, man. Bye.
Cheers, Sid. All right, brother.